Never can tell. I want to begin this morning with a little side note, because usually when people come to church, they say, you know, that's a really good sermon. I wish so-and-so had heard that. Well, that's not where I want you to go this morning. I want you to take this personally. I want you to say, how does this apply to me? Don't think about anybody else that needs to hear this, other than me, because the reason I do these is because I need to hear this. And you all just have to listen to what I have to tell myself. So, think, how does it apply to me? Not, how does this apply to somebody else? Because I'm going to talk about this morning caring about others. And I'm convinced that's a message we all need, because I need it. Because when I prepare these sermons, I listen to something I need to hear. As Jim says, he leads songs he likes to lead. Y'all just have to sing them. Well, I do sermons that I need to hear, and you have to put up with it. We'll start with a little anecdote. There was a youth minister that was attending a Special Olympics where special needs children competed with tremendous dedication and enthusiasm. There was a 220-yard dash, and contestants lined up at the starting line, and at the single, they started running as fast as they could. One boy named Andrew quickly took the lead and was soon about 50 yards ahead of everybody else. And as he approached the final turn, he looked back and saw that his best friend had fallen and hurt himself on the track. So Andrew stopped. He looked at the finish line. Then he looked back at his friend. Of course, people were shouting for him to run, run, right? Because we always want him to finish first, right? That's what it's all about. No, he went back, and he got his friend. He helped him up, brushed him off, and hand in hand, the two of them crossed the finish line dead last. And as they did that, the crowd was cheering, because there are some things in life more important than finishing first. Solomon wrote in his book of Ecclesiastes that two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone, for when he falls, he has not another to lift him up. Because we all fall and get knocked down in life, don't we? It's a given. It's going to happen. The question is just when and how often. And isn't it wonderful when we've got someone close enough who can lift us up, dust us off, and help us continue? Today I want to look at Philippians chapter 2, verses 19 through 30. Here Paul is writing to the Philippians, and in it he is showing exactly what it means to care about others. Now, just a side note, when Paul writes this, you have to understand that he's in prison. So put that as the background of all of this information. He is in prison. And he's writing to the Philippians. And there's a few things I want us to take away here as we go through this set of verses. You'll notice that in verse 19 he says, "And I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, so that I too may be cheered by news of you." Now, Paul's a missionary, right? And sometimes missionaries send letters back to people that they know. And usually what are they doing? They're asking for assistance, right? They often ask for prayers, but they also ask for assistance. And he easily could have said, "I'm here in prison in Rome. The conditions are really bad, and I need help. So please take up a special collection and send it to me as quickly as you can." Instead, Paul writes, I'm concerned about you, and I need to know about you, and I'm going to send someone who is here caring for me back to you so I can find out. You ever call your family? Friends? Do you do it often? Why do you do it? So you can hear all the bad things going on in their life? Does happen, by the way, right? But usually you call, why? Because you want to hear about the good things that are going on in their life, right? You want to hear their voice because it makes you feel well. But you want to know they're doing well because you wish them well. You do it because you're concerned about them. We do it because we love them. And when we call them, we want to hear good news, don't we? Because we want to know they're doing well. So Paul wanted some good news from his friends in Philippi. Now there's a story, there we go, about Lou Gehrig. You may know him. He was a first baseman for the Yankees. And he contracted a disease called ALS. And in 1941, June 22nd, when he died, before that, he had this disease, and the doctors had no idea how to cure it. And so what they were doing was experimenting different drugs on him and other patients at the time, trying to find out one that might work. Just before he died, Lou Gehrig called his friend Bob Cosadine, and he said, Bob, I've got great news. The boys in the lab have come up with a new serum, and they're saying it. We're going to try it on 10 of us, and it seems that it's working well on 9 out of 10. So naturally, Bob asked the question, right? Is it working for you? And Lou answered, well, no, but 9 out of 10. How do you like those odds? Now that's somebody who cares about other people. 90% results, but I'm the one. But look at that, it's working for 9 other people. Because 9 other people can be helped. That's what we should be considering, is the other people that can be helped. Apostle Paul was the same way. He wrote earlier in Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, it says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or out of conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each one of you not look to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. You ever ask your question? You ask yourself this question on Sunday morning? Why am I going to church? You ever ask that question? Am I going because I feel I owe a debt to God, so I'm trying to pay it back? Or because I'm carrying such a heavy burden that I hope will be lifted? Or just because I like the singing and the fellowship, and yes, even the preaching? Or just why are we going? Well, to me, the question is wrong. Now, a lot of you are going to ask, why would you say that? Because I'm going to say that what you think of something impacts the way you react to it and how it impacts you. The question is wrong because you are not going to church, because you cannot go to church. You are the church. You cannot go to church any more than you can go to family. When we phrase it wrong in our mind, such as I'm going to the church, referring to the structure, we've taken away what it really is. When I say I'm going to church, what we mean is I'm going to worship service this morning to be with the church. And we need to phrase it in our mind so that we understand what we're doing. When you put it into a term where it's a place that I go to be different than I am the rest of my life, it impacts how you live your life. I love the song that Chris led. We're standing on holy ground. Why? Because it doesn't matter where you are, where the Lord is holy. Which means everywhere you go, everything you do, is what? Holy. For the Lord is with you, and where He is holy. Do we live our lives like that? We should. But we often think that this place is holy, and the rest of our life is not. This place is where the family of God is, and the rest of my life is separate. This place is where Christians gather, and when I'm not with them, I can be someone else. And if you think that way, you act that way. If you realize that Jesus said, "You are the light set on a hillside. You are the salt of the earth." Because there's no other way they're going to find out. So why should we go to be with the family of God in the church? That is the called out, which is what church means. The word is literally the called out. Called out of what? Called out from being part of the world, that sinful nature. So if we're generally interested in the others when we come to the training ground that is the building, what should we be doing? In the classic one we always talk about, arguing in the car all the way here and then putting on the smiling face and getting out and then brushing off all of those things and coming in and just, "Hi." Okay? No, maybe we should be looking for those people who need us. When you see that mother bringing her whole tribe in at once, trying to get them all settled, maybe you should help. Instead of saying, "Oh, I can't believe," right? When you see that visitor sitting here for the first time, introduce yourself and tell them, "I'm glad you're here." When you look at the prayer list and you learn somebody's having a difficult time, send them a text message. Send them an email. Send them a note. Let them know that you are praying for them and you care for them. Check out the new directory that Judy put together that everybody has, because she diligently made sure everybody got one. Look through it. See faces in there that you haven't seen in a while and say, for whatever reason, for work, from sickness, from neglect, reach out to them and say, "Hey, we miss you. We care about you." Maybe we'll find out there's some reason that we didn't know about, that we should have known about. When you find somebody who's struggling with a heavy burden of grief or loss, hold their hand. Maybe weep with them. Just let them know you care. Now, I realize many of us, many of you all, because I had to do this sermon for me, many of you all do this very well. And I praise God for every one of you. And isn't it refreshing that we can care about each other in such a way that there are no hidden agendas, and that we care about enough to say, "You're my brother and you're my sister," and treat each other like family? A quote from a cancer survivor named Walter Levine, because he said, 99% of everything you do in life is attitude. If you have a relationship with God, then you have the right attitude. And you're going to learn to ask the one question in life that covers everything. Now, there's a question I want to know. What is the one question in life that covers everything? And you know what his opinion was? How can I help you? Not what can you do for me, The one thing that matters most is, if you remember when the Lord was asked, what are the greatest commandments? He said what? Not only love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, but love others as yourself. And actually, Jesus put it this way. For in John 13, verses 34 and 35, he said, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. For by this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. You want the world to know you're a disciple of Jesus? He put it very simply. It's not how well you speak. Not how well you know the word. Not how pious you may be at work or in your life. It's simply love one another. Because there are several things that happen when you actually are genuinely concerned about other people, aren't there? First of all, you're going to forget about your own problems. We seldom realize it. But because when we think we're having trouble, we need to do something extravagant and something indulgent just for me, right? I need some me time. Unfortunately, I found the more I'm with me, the less I like me. That's the worst thing I can do. The more depressed I am, the more depressed I become when I focus on how depressed I am. It's a vicious cycle. The minute I stop thinking about how bad things are for me, things start to become better for me. And yet I do it every time. You know, it's some things you just can't learn, can you? Because we refuse to learn. I'm good about that. I refuse to learn. Inherently, I insist that I will not learn certain things. Even though mentally I know it, I'm not going to do it. I'm glad you all are so much better at it than I am. But we all know that's not the answer, is it? The Bible tells us that's not the answer, and oddly, psychologists are suddenly discovering. Isn't it funny how psychologists eventually start to learn what God has said forever? Scientists eventually start to learn what God has said from the beginning. Psychologists are learning that the quickest way to get over your own troubles is to become involved in helping someone else. We know that God knew this a long time ago because Isaiah said it in chapter 58. If you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness, and your gloom shall be as noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire in the scorched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be watered like a watered garden, like the spring of water, whose waters do not fail. And your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt, and you shall rise up foundations for many generations, and you shall be called a repairer of the breach and the restorer of the streets to dwell in. Not if you focus on yourself, what? If you pour out yourself. For those who are more troubled than you. So if the first thing we learn from Paul's letter is to cultivate genuine interest in others, what's the second thing we should learn? Well, in verse 20 he says about Timothy, for I have no one like him who is generally concerned about your welfare. Paul's talking about Timothy, and he knew Timothy well, for he had discipled him from a young man and watched him grow in his faith. Now Timothy's an adult. Timothy has a ministry of his own, and Paul looks at Timothy and says, I have no one like him. Paul's basically saying, Timothy and I are of the same soul. where kindred spirits were like-minded because we care about you. Now, there's different levels of caring about other people's and being friends, are there not? How many people did you know that on a daily basis you meet, you walk up to, say, "Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Dominique?" There you go. Good answer. How you doing? Good. There you go. Perfect answer. Why do we do that? That's the classic answer, by the way, because we will say, "I'm fine." Are either one of you fine? No. But we don't want to share. Now, a lot of times I don't want to tell people my problems because I realize that theirs are worse and I got to listen to them. But you find out rather quickly, neither one of us are fine. We're lying to everybody. But we don't want to share on a level that it takes. So we just go about our life saying, "Oh, I'm fine. I'm good. Dominic at least was honest. Sleepy. He gave me a quick, easy definition of, told me everything I need to know. I'm tired. Leave me alone." But you have other friends that when you come up to them, you say, "How you doing?" You know, and they know, you truly want to know. "How are you today? I got an hour. Sit down. Let's talk." If it takes three, it's okay. Because there are certain friends we have that we know that we can share on a level that aren't like anybody else we know. There are few people in your life that you have that you can do that to. My wife is one of those unusual people that everybody in the world considers their best friend. I go with her places and people say, "Oh, this is my best friend." I don't know anybody else that every person they meet says, "This is my best friend." And yet Judy seems to be that way anywhere she goes. Why? Because she cultivates that. She works at it. To her, it's important for other people to feel that way, even though she's not trying to cultivate it. That's not her purpose to do that, is so other people, it's not like she's counting how many best friends she has. To her, that's just what you do if you care about somebody. I am who I am today because, specifically, the Lord blessed me with that lovely lady. I would not be here today doing this for sure. Because I couldn't even get up and lead a prayer in the congregation when we got married. Because I was too afraid that I might say the wrong thing. I was too afraid that someone might think badly of me. I was too afraid that I would misuse the talents the Lord gave me, and therefore He'd take them away from me. The more you realize that the Lord gave you talents so you can use them, so the more talents you have, the more He can give you, the more you realize He's going to bless you. If we hide it and bury it in the ground, we still have that talent, but what good is it? Not any at all, is it? But what Timothy was to Paul was someone who was so like-minded, so much of the same attitude. You ever had that friend that you can finish their sentences before they get there? You know them so well, you know what they're going to say before they say it, and halfway through you can answer the question before they've finished it. How many friends do you have that are really like that? If you can count them on a hand, you've probably got more than most people, because most people have one or two. And if that person happens to be your husband or your wife, you are actually better than 98% of the people who are married in the world. But that's what God wanted it to be. And that's what He wants from each one of us. Someone you can say is no one like them. Now, Paul goes on to say, not only should we care about other people's, should we have someone of like mind? But when you are truly a friend, you need to be able to let that person go too. For the story goes on to talk about Epaphroditus. In verses 25 through 30, we find that Epaphroditus was a member of the church in Philippi. They sent him to Rome to check on Paul because they were concerned of him. We also learn that while he was there, Epaphroditus became sick. He was there to help Paul, but instead he got sick. He got so sick that he was almost sick unto death. People in Philippi hear about it and they become concerned about him. And so Paul is saying, I'm going to send him back. Even though you sent him here to minister to me, I think it more important that he return home to you because you are so concerned about him. Paul easily could have said, Timothy's already leaving, and now you're going to leave too, and here I am in prison with nobody. Instead, he said, I really think it would be in your best interest if you go back and you go with Timothy, because they're worried about you. Not how much they worry about me, because that doesn't matter. We read of another time that Paul is in prison and he doesn't have anybody there with him. In 2 Timothy 4, verse 9 through 11, we see that Paul is saying, do your best to come to me. Now he's writing to Timothy, who has left him, right? Because he sent him away. For Demas, in love this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. And Crescentus has gone to Galatia and Titus to Dalmatia. Luke alone is with me, so get Mark and bring him with you, for he is very useful to me in my ministry. Paul was feeling alone. He felt like everybody left him. He only had one friend still there when he needed help. But we also read a little further down that at my first defense, no one came to stand by me, but all had deserted me. But may it not be charged against them, but the Lord stood by me and strengthened me, so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed and all of the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth, and the Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom, and to him be the glory forever. For we truly find what Paul knew here is the Lord is the best friend we'll ever have. He'll never leave you. He'll never forsake you. When you fall, he'll pick you up. He'll dust you off and walk with you hand in hand all the way to the finish line. And you can bet your life on that. So this morning, if you don't know him as your friend, and if he's not your Lord and Savior, then we'll extend his invitation. And he stands ready to meet your every need, to forgive your sins and give you the promise of everlasting life. So will you come?